Should we, do you need to?
No, don't proceed.
You're okay?
Yeah. Okay. When we finish, I will stop them. I will let them wait. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. One of the audiences of this sort of interview, as was mentioned before, may be school children in India, China, Rwanda.
Yeah.
One of the questions they might have for someone like you is that you are defending people who have been accused of some of the worst atrocities that we have known. How do you explain that? How do you justify that to them?
I would tell them that it's in their interest and the interest of the international community to know the truth of what happened. And if the person are found liable, to know what motivated them to do so, to read into the minds of these people, and that what the parties know is a prerequisite to true justice, so that it doesn't happen again. So that we can be able to say, look, when the alleged crimes were committed, this is what this or that person was thinking about. These are the factors. This is his defense. Except we know all this. Secondly, I will tell them that the rule of law matters. The rule of law. Where there's no rule of law, there's impunity. And that this process is needed to enhance the rule of law. This is what I will tell them. And that it is in their interest so that they grow up learning. Perhaps the people before them, when the crime first started in 1958, they had a credible process. And the rule of law prevail. We would never have been here. That's what I would tell them.
When you mentioned the importance of understanding how they think,
yes.
What, can you talk a little bit about your changing perceptions of your clients over the course of your representation?
Well, let me say one thing. My clients were at the war front, especially the soldiers. And you have to make a clear distinction here between the politicians and the soldiers. And you'll be very surprised that many other pair of officers in close session have come to defend them because they knew whom the adversaries were. And you ought also to know the Rwandan system as well. The politicians in Rwanda, from first the coalition government, if you look at their case, the attempts for them to take power from Habyarimana, and they went at different times to get into some form of alliance with RPF. RPF was an armed rebel movement. It was not really a political movement as such. It was never a political movement in Rwanda. You have on the one side politicians sitting on the table and talking with an armed rebel movement that is talking and attacking. And this politician had nothing. You had an arms embargo on the Rwandan army from Belgium and the international community at the time. You had the supply of weapons from Uganda. And now, of late, we now know that some of the arms came from Libya, from what the experts have been able to come to. And of course, when you have all this, you will find that, and when some of them will have testified, you'll find that apart from what they call command responsibility, it will be very, very difficult to find that any soldier going to kill this man, kill this person. No, that's not the case. Or they didn't do enough to protect the civilian population. It will be very, very difficult. Having defended the politician and defended the soldier, I can tell you this, that the responsibility of the soldier is very, 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 has become difficult to prove, apart from, as you say, notions of joint criminal enterprise, and perhaps they tried in paragraph 22 of the indictment to talk about conspiracy, and the court have ruled out any direct agreement. They said there were some other acts from which some inferences could be made. But when you have more than one inference from the same facts, it poses a problem. And I think the prosecutor has has a lot of difficulties proving the crimes against the soldiers than the civilian politicians in this particular case. So, with them as it is, I think they love their country so much, love Rwanda. And they are aware they lost the war, they admit that. They know exactly where responsibility lies. They were always soldiers under the command of civilians, people, government. And I don't think that you can really put them and the civilian politicians in the same basket. It's very, very difficult. And I don't see them accepting that. They still believe that they were soldiers. That's why you'd be surprised that the presidential guard that is accused for having committed most of the murders, 3/4 of the presidential guards are now in the RPF, including some of the officers that were alleged to have committed the crimes. General Gatsinzi was the interim chief of staff of the Rwandan army at the time that some of the murders took place. He's the minister of defense in the RPF today. The RPF knows so well that these were adversaries. And the only reason why some of these people are here now is because these are the people who refuse to come back home, and they are the ones who are perceived to be supporting the rebellion in the east of Congo. The people who say no, we surrendered, whom they suspect are likely. And the ones who are here are some of the best soldiers you will find. They went to some of the best military school, war college. And many of them did military training in the United States, in Belgium, some in North Korea. So you will find that they are well-trained soldiers. And I cannot prejudge the case. I don't have the authority to do so, but I think generally the evidence against the soldiers is very weak, except in cases that they apply some of this notion of liability. But direct perpetration, no. Or to say that they had knowledge to commit this sort of crime, no. On the contrary, they did the best. They did the best they could in those circumstances. And take note that the embargo was all on one side. Take note that the RPF moved into the capital from different directions, attack weapons. General Dallaire was there on the spot. He did not. He didn't even make an attempt to stop them. So, as I say, it is one case that at the end of this case, I think the archives of this case will be preserved by the United Nations. This will not be handed over to Rwanda or to any person. This will be preserved under the auspices of the United Nations, so that researchers, yourself and others, will come and read through the transcripts, read through this, read through the exhibits, and read through the rulings that the judges were making and the case went on. Because when you read the judgment, you do not know exactly all this. When that is done, it is researchers like yourself who will be able to tell the world exactly the case, what actually transpired here. Based on the judgment in its side that at least half of it is in closed sessions, you will never really know the facts of the case as it is. Even Gachacha is not in closed sessions. It's done mostly within in closed sessions. Yet the witnesses are virtually the same. Yet we found witnesses who came here and gave one version of the story. Before Gachacha, they could not because they are known. And the versions changed. So